Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. All right. Hello there. Thank you for coming back. Here we are 2 weeks in a row. Look at that consistency finally coming back into play, working on it. Really, really glad that you're here, that you are either listening or watching this episode. If you are new to the podcast, again, if you just found this, if you found this on YouTube, this is not the beginning. We have done 150 or so episodes of this podcast called Breaking Down Collapse. Please feel free to, if you're finding this on YouTube, go find the podcast, listen to at least the first 8 episodes, get a good idea of what we're talking about here. And at least, you know, you can listen to through to the other episodes as well if you'd like more detail on other aspects of the idea of societal collapse. So last week we touched on why collapse is inevitable. Feel free to, again, go back and listen to that one if you haven't yet, because it leads into the question that we are asking today, which is, what will collapse look like? And this is an interesting one because, you know, people want to know how it's going to affect them individually. What types of things will you see in your life? And the truth is, I want to know too, because nobody knows exactly. And anybody who tells you with certainty what the future is going to be is lying. There are a billion, more than that, a trillion, who knows how many different possibilities and options for what the future could hold and what collapse will look like, right? Now, there are things that we do know. Collapse is inevitable, so it's going to happen. We just don't know the path that it's going to take and what it's going to look like. We know it's already begun. We went over that last week as well. Everyone has an opinion, loves to talk about it, but the predictions are fun. When it comes to predictions, that's not what today's episode is. I'm not giving you predictions for what I think the future is going to be, though predictions are fun. And I will, you know, every year, Kel and I used to do a look back on the previous year and what collapse looked like that year. And then we would, at the end of the episode, do predictions for the future. And I'm going to stay true to that. I may even do an entire episode for the past year, and I may do an entire episode on my ideas about what the future might look like. But that's just meant to be fun. The predictions we've done in the past are like 90% wrong. Some of them we get right, but it's very rare. So when you listen to people talk about collapse, you have to be so careful not to fall into letting any one person tell you what the future is going to be and then spiraling and making decisions based off of that person's view of the future. So this episode, again, is not predictions. It is ideas, generalizations of collapses, you know, from what we know in the past and what seems like, I don't know if obvious is the right word, but apparent pathways that collapse could take. But it doesn't mean that I would expect that you take from this video and change your life accordingly, right? Don't make any drastic decisions based on what I say here today. All right. So before we can really talk about what collapse will look like, you have to know what collapse is. These are two definitions that we have brought up in the past in our first episodes of the podcast. First is from Jared Diamond. He says, collapse is a drastic decrease in human population size and or political, economic, social complexity over a considerable area for an extended time. He's got some great books on collapse that you've probably heard about. He's probably one of the most like prolific authors surrounding the idea of societal collapse. And then we have Joseph Tainter, who we interviewed here on the podcast a couple of years back. He says, quote, the rapid simplification of a society. It's the rapid loss of an established level of socio-political and economic complexity. So both of these quotes reference political economic and social complexity and the loss of that complexity. So it's a simplification of a complex society, especially in those three areas. Jared Diamond also adds this bit about a drastic decrease in human population. I will note he says and or, so he's not saying that a population has to necessarily have a dramatic decrease, but that is a common part of collapse. Okay, so what does it mean to have a political, economic, social simplification? We will discuss that in our episode today. But before that, let's talk about the fact that collapse will be unequally distributed. And now that I read that, I don't know if that's the right way to say that. But it will not be distributed equally, right? Based on a few different things, not limited to what I've listed here, geography. So where you live will have or could have a large impact on what collapse will look like for you. Wealth status. It's no secret that the wealthy will have a better time in collapse generally. There are obvious exceptions to that rule. But in general, if you've got the money, it's going to help you through the process. Health status, right? Social status, your preparation, and of course, random circumstance. Collapse is not going to look the same for everybody. And that's both across time, across severity, and across intensity. Severity is how bad collapse will be. Intensity will be how fast it happens once it started. And time will be how much, you know, when it starts. Okay. So there's some different ways in which collapse is going to manifest. Again, this is not like, this doesn't encompass everything, but I think this takes in some of the most important major areas that we're going to see collapse have an effect on your lives. Now, what I'm going to do for now is I'm just going to read each header with the subheading, then we'll talk about something else, and then we're going to come back and actually look at each of these individually. So bear with me as I just read through these. So first is economically. Most consequences of collapse manifest in the economy because the economy relies on steady growth to perpetuate. The economy, in quotes, is the metric by which we measure success and well-being. So yeah, I'm just going to leave that. We'll talk more about that here in a minute. Politically, politics serves two purposes, react to the economy and consolidate power. Geopolitically, power dynamics between nations in order to preserve individual economic success. Socially, income distribution, justice, cooperation, poverty, culture, etc. Technologically, economic hardship means new technologies don't progress and existing technologies become too expensive to continue. Infrastructure maintenance costs can no longer be paid, leading to weakening and collapsing infrastructure. And complexity. The convenience that comes with complexity erodes, meaning less choices and variety in the system. So before we go into each of those individually, let's talk a little bit about this, I don't know if I'd call it a cycle. It's a cycle, but sort of the pathway from A to B, starting with complexity and vulnerability. So it's important to understand how we get from A to B, what that path kind of looks like, because as you picture your life and as you picture the way you live, knowing what it is that's sort of causing collapse and the way that it might manifest can help you to see it as it's happening. So yeah, this first step, complexity and vulnerability. Our complex systems are completely interconnected and reliant on one another, creating a network of dependencies. Early on in the podcast, we did an episode on complexity. I think it was the second or third episode. Second. And the whole idea behind that is, look, when you live in a simple society, you basically rely on yourself for your well-being. Yourself or a very close, you know, close number of people. Your food, your water, your shelter, all of that would be, you're only a few steps away from it. You might be growing your own food in your garden to live off of. You might be walking to the stream to get your water, right? Whereas in a complex society, we add a middleman to our well-being. No longer are we depending completely on ourselves to survive. Now, you can put in work to receive money and then exchange that money for goods, the goods required to survive. The issue is that you are no longer in control of the goods required to survive. All of the resources have to go through an entirely complex system to get to you. the number of touch points that you are away from your food is massive, right? Usually. If you're buying locally, then maybe there's less. But in general, like, you go to the grocery store and the food you're buying came from halfway across the world and required a logistical nightmare or a logistical miracle, I guess, depending how you're looking at it, to get from where it was grown to you. So the money part of it creates this huge middle ground that we rely on, that if it breaks, suddenly we have found ourselves without access to the things that we need in order to survive. So that is where the vulnerability piece to that comes in. Complexity gives us so many options. It makes life so comfortable in so many ways, and it gives us so much variety, right? I can go to the grocery store and I can pick from 1,000 different food items to purchase. Where, yeah, in a simple society, I had like 6, right? Like the berries that grow on that tree over there, or like maybe the like corn that I grew over here. And so the complexity has its pros, and there are so many of them. And if complexity can continue on for forever and it didn't have any like vulnerabilities, then wow, this is amazing, because really we do get so much out of it. But that vulnerability exists. So moving on to the next step is weakness. Catabolic collapse causes a system to decay over time, weakening the overall structure. So that vulnerability starts to show as catabolic collapse persists. So those cracks in the system start to widen. The infrastructure starts to fail slowly, right? It weakens little by little. The next is a trigger event. So a triggering event or failure in one system can set off a chain reaction, causing other connected systems to also fail. Those trigger events can be massive. They can also be small things, right? So a massive example is COVID-19. That was a trigger event that wreaked havoc on the economy, on the healthcare system, on so many parts of our lives, right? Our mental states, politically, socially, the way we interact with each other, it broke us in a lot of ways, right? So that's an example of a decently large trigger event. But smaller trigger events can also happen in individual areas of our systems, the individual pieces of infrastructure. This can be natural disasters, you know, Hurricane Helene as an example in North Carolina, right? Or some of these other hurricanes or earthquakes or droughts and things that can put strain on an individual area. That one thing may not cause collapse, right? But it can continue the strain. It can exacerbate catabolic collapse as it puts more and more stress on the system. Will collapse be triggered by some massive event? It's possible. It's not really my opinion that that's how it's going to happen. I think it will be a series of massive events that quickly chip away at and erode the system over time. All right. Domino effect. So the collapse or weakening of one part of a system can cause the failure of other dependent systems, creating a cascading domino effect. Amplification, so as this cycle continues, the rate at which other systems crack or break intensifies. And eventually, we get system collapse. Enough systems collapse individually to cause the system to cease functioning altogether. So again, this process doesn't happen equally across our entire social system. This is going to happen differently in some areas than others. And it doesn't happen equally like within each one of these things. This is a cycle. It's going to continue. There might be a trigger event. There might be some recovery. Then we'll see new weaknesses pop back up. And then there will be a new trigger event that worsens things. And that'll keep happening and happening in this downward spiral. Man. One quote that I've heard a lot regarding collapse is that it will be slow, 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 and then all at once. And it's this idea that we are going to like bear a lot of just cruddy times where it's not necessarily this big epic downfall that we're experiencing where everybody's eyes are opened. And no, it's most likely going to be a slow degradation, chipping away of the system piece by piece. And that's the slow grind. This is catabolic collapse. We're talking about, Robert Evans calls it the crumbles, right? Where things just fall apart. A lot of people think of collapse and they might picture it as like this big event where, because that's what you see in the movies, right? You see post-apocalyptic films where the entire world all at once realizes that everything's gone to hell and like panic ensues and everybody's freaking out. And like, we might have individual things like that happen, right? During COVID-19, we had this panic for buying certain things at the grocery store. And there was a little bit of that feel to it. Those things will happen. They have happened. They'll continue to happen. But I don't think that that's the main process of collapse. People might look back and mock COVID-19 and the response to it and say, oh, COVID-19 didn't end up being anything. It was no big deal. People thought that was going to be the end of the world. Well, I think the end of the world comes from 100 COVID-19s, right? In each of its own individual ways, happening in different parts of the system, weakening different areas, and slowly taking us to the edge. Now, the fast at the end of it all, I think there will be a fast. Once we get to that point where everything is on its last leg, there will be a straw that breaks the camel's back. But we have a while, in my opinion, before we reach that point. All right, so let's get into going into to each of these items a little bit deeper. So economically, if you've listened to the podcast from the beginning, you know Kellen and I always talked about the idea that collapse will manifest itself through the economy. It just is what it is. Anything that's going on with collapse, you'll see it happening in what we call the economy. And it's interesting because the economy feels like it should just be one little part of everything. But the truth is we encapsulate everything, every success or failure that we as humans suffer or accomplish comes through the economy. So simple societies worried about what they could provide for themselves. We have to worry about the money we can provide for ourselves and the system providing an exchange for that money. So it's kind of what I mentioned before, right? We still have to be able to individually, we have to be able to provide for ourselves by working at a job or coming up with finances in whatever way we end up doing that. And then that money goes towards paying someone else. It moves its way through this massive system. And then we are able to exchange that for goods. So from an economic standpoint, basically, we have taken this idea of fending for ourselves or building for ourselves, and we have reverberated all of that need through the economy, and we've created one big hole around it. Our resources, our natural resources, the primary form of wealth, which is everything that's in the ground, right, that we pull up to make the world that we've lived in, makes its way through the economy. Last week, we talked about how growth is required in the economy. Everything has to grow. The number of people we have on the earth has to grow. The amount of resources, the amount of spending, all of it has to go up, up, up. And if it doesn't, we will collapse. So to think about this in a different way, think of anything collapse related. And I think you can picture how that thing will affect the economy. Taking a very simple and obvious choice would be like food. Let's say that you're saying, but Corey, like climate change and, you know, let's say there's a major drought somewhere and it means that there's going to be failure of breadbasket nations or something. Okay. So if you're telling me that we are, you know, there's going to be a decrease in the amount of grain available and it's a grain that many nations rely on for bread. Well, of course, that's going to manifest in an economic way because the cost of bread is going to increase, right? The amount of bread available decreases, so the cost will increase. You will notice that in your ability or inability to buy a loaf of bread now, and that will manifest itself through inflation and so on and so forth. So yeah, that's how that works, and it will work the same way in everything. So is it going to be inflationary? Is it going to be deflationary? Both are terrible, right? But what if you get both at once, which is this idea of stagflation? So Kellen and I, we did an episode on in one of our first aid. It was on the financial system. I think it was episode 6. And we talked about that need for growth. And Kellen asked the question, well, why, based on everything you've told me in this episode, why have we not seen massive inflation? This was back in the end of 2020 when we did that episode. And I said, well, the inflation's there. It's just not, I think it's not hit the average person yet. It's up in the wealthy people territory, but it will trickle down. And sure enough, it did. Within a year, we had sort of that massive inflationary push, and now we're finally coming back down from that a couple of years later. So the inflation, we felt that pain. We know how bad inflation can hurt. Deflation is something we have not felt for a while, right? 2008 was the last like really deflationary time. And that's, deflation is worse than inflation in so many ways. But, and when do you get deflation? You get deflation when there's so many goods in the market, but there's not enough money moving to buy those goods, right? If there is a collapse of jobs, if people aren't able to have enough work, then that's going to, it's going to cause costs of things to come down. And that can quickly spiral out and do damage to an economy that can be really hard to come back from. And it did take several years to come back from the 2008 financial crisis. But worse than both of these is stagflation. And I think stagflation is what we have in our future in collapse. Again, talking about the future, you can't say for sure what's going to happen. I'm not making a prediction for what specifically is going to happen. I'm not telling you that everything's going to be stagflationary. But in my personal opinion, it's what I see for the future and why.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Ja, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur einen Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
So basically on one end, I think we are going to see the cost of goods increase as the resources for those goods decrease. So we talked about grain earlier, right? There's going to be thousands of examples of that, where goods of all sorts are going to be more difficult to acquire, more difficult to get through the supply chain. After COVID-19, we saw what happened with supply chains, how hard it was to get things where they needed to be on time. We saw things like the, what was that boat's name in the Suez Canal, the Evergreen or something like that. Those types of things will continue to happen as there's a continuation of climate issues, of pandemics, of political turmoil, geopolitical turmoil, all of these things. So yeah, it's going to be harder and harder to receive goods, which is going to drive their prices up. This is one of the areas where I was talking about wealth inequality, wealth status, and how that changes what collapse looks like for you. Look, if you've got $10 million in the bank, then a price of bread going from $3 to $15 may not hit you that bad, right? You may not really notice that. It's like that one movie or that one show, I'm trying to remember what show it is, where she says, how much can a banana cost? $7 or $10? Wealthy people just aren't going to notice those increases the same as the average person. So anyway, that's the inflationary side of things. But what happens when wages don't increase to match that? When the money being put into the economy doesn't increase. In a normal inflationary state, not only do prices increase, but the amount of money going into the system, the people paying for those goods, is increasing as well. Wages go up, right? People are able to pull money from wherever. The government's creating money and all of this stuff is happening, driving prices up and up and up in this cycle. But what happens when the wages aren't going up, right? Or when the government isn't just printing money and throwing it at its citizens? What happens when the prices of goods go up, but the ability to purchase them does not go up? Well, then you have only the wealthy who are really able to afford anything, and those who are not in the best financial situations find themselves simply going without. This isn't just happening on an isolated individual scale. This isn't economic or an economy-wide issue that will lead to cascading failures and the inability to be able to continue with supply chains. If people aren't paying enough, if not enough people are buying something, it decreases the ability to pay the laborers as it goes up that supply chain, so on and so forth. So it can be a crippling economic challenge to overcome. All right. And then, yeah, so that's that last point that I've got here on the slide. The price of goods increases, ability to pay decreases. This is unequally distributed across the wealth gap. And your ability to exist in the system relies on your access to money. I hate to say it, but that's the world we live in. Okay, so politically, in that slide where we talked about the different aspects here, I said that there was basically two functions of politics. One was to react to the collapse process. So how do leaders react to the collapse process? Do they offer band-aid solutions, worsening the problem in the long run? This kind of goes back to that inflationary issue, right? Are they just throwing money at their citizens saying, oh yeah, the price of bread's increased, so here's an extra $1,200 a month, you know, as we did during COVID. I know that that helped a lot of people. I know that that $1,200 that the government gave out a couple of different times, a lot of people needed that to get by. But we saw inflation come afterwards, right? And did it just come from the $1,200? Very unlikely, but it was a contributor at least. So there's band-aid solutions that governments can try and throw at things, but that just extends the status quo, meanwhile setting us up for worse success in the long run. Next, do they cling to power? Do they increase oppression and violence as they feel their control and their grasp slip? That goes along with the next one. Does trust in the government evaporate? And does that sacred aura of the center persist? If you're not familiar with the idea of the sacred aura of the center, this is an idea by John Michael Greer, basically talking about this idea that in the past, and maybe still now to some degree, there was this sort of respect that people have for their governments. Me, growing up, maybe if you're older than 30, you might remember feeling this when you were younger. And maybe you still have this same respect now. But I just remember growing up thinking, I just had complete trust in the president of the United States, right? They were elected to this high position and they must be, you know, a person of greater moral authority and they were going to make the right decisions. Now, I was a kid, so much of that was me being naive. But I do think that in the past, there was more trust, more respect in our political institutions than there obviously are today. Much of the Trump era and what's happened over the last 10 years in politics in the United States, I think, is shaking people awake from that sacred aura of the center, having that respect. And once that trust evaporates, that can lead to a lot of difficult times for people in the government if they want to maintain that control. So how do they do it? Do they do it through increasing violence, oppression, fascism, which seems to be the direction that we're headed in now? What happens to the people when the government gets distracted? So as political, you know, internal political turmoil increases, as geopolitical turmoil increases, and as pressures mount from the different collapse-related difficulties, you know, that's going to cause governments to have to shift their focus, shift the resources towards these, you know, putting a bandaid on the bullet hole, sticking their finger in the crack in the dam to try and get things to stop. But when, as happens in catabolic collapse, shifting around those resources, a government being distracted in one area over another, or especially a government that's trying to maintain power against a people that are starting to question its authority, that can take all of a government's time and resources to handle. So what gets neglected in that time, right? The infrastructure, and I don't just mean physical infrastructure, though that is a part of it, the infrastructure of our organizations, of our institutions that keep people running. We rely on, you know, I'm speaking for the United States here, we rely on a lot of institutions to keep things running relatively smoothly, to keep a lot of people alive and well. You know, just one really random example is like the Veterans Association. I don't know if that's what it's called, but how much money and time and resources and effort goes into our veterans. And that's one of the things that this new DOGE program is, they're talking about ceasing funding for. And yeah, so that's the type of thing, right? That's just one example. But as the resources and the focus gets moved away from those entities, what happens to them? Okay, and then lastly, how far are citizens willing to allow their government to go? As fascism, oppression, violence, scapegoating, all of these different things increase, is there a point, and what is that point, in which people are going to say, no, 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 enough is enough, you know, attempts at revolution? Who picks up the pieces if the government's overthrown? So the whole idea of power dynamics and vacuums and everything that can come if a government goes down. And look, we've seen this in smaller nations all over the world several times over, and it can get ugly. And again, you know, the fact that the government is in charge of in many cases, the well-being of so many people, especially when it comes to economic regulation and all of that, what happens is that disappears. Okay, moving on. Geopolitically, how do global leaders interact during the collapse process? So instead of a individual leader of a nation, but how do global leaders interact with each other? Do they work together, or are they taking advantage of each other's weaknesses? Do they lash out in desperation as their own empires fall and citizens suffer? So it's often said that like the last dying gasp of an empire is to lash out, right? And to create wars, overextend themselves in an effort to show that they are still powerful, that they still have control. And it often leads to that overextending, often leads to a collapse of that empire. So will we see that? And where will we see that the most? How does war work in a world that's dying? Does nuclear war become more of an option? Is a new world war in order? I don't know the answer to that, but there's certainly things to think about. We're seeing geopolitical tensions ramp up now. And you can only imagine, or I can only imagine, that as things get worse and certain nations are hit harder than others, that there will no doubt be an increase in larger nations trying to take advantage of those cascading failures. All right, what happens to humanitarian aid? Right now, there's so much in the way of humanitarian aid that works internationally. Do we lose all of that? How many people suffer as that humanitarian aid ceases? As nations start to have, you know, they have to focus on their own issues as those issues are increasing. And so as they look inwardly more, how does that affect the nations who rely on that aid? Okay. And then do countries help the citizens of countries living under tyranny and oppression? I've always, you know, I've hated this idea of the U.S. being like the world's police. It shouldn't be that way. But looking at it from the perspective of, you know, if you are a nation, if you're a citizen of a nation and that nation is treating you poorly, treating its citizens poorly, is there a point at which you would hope that another nation would step in to help? And is there any possibility of that as collapse persists? Okay, socially, how do we interact with each other as collapse progresses? I imagine that we will see plenty of instances of tribalism. I mean, we're already seeing this, right? So it's just an intensification of this, of scapegoats and of oppression. The scapegoats part, for me, is one of the scariest ideas around this. This idea that people will turn on the people who are less or least likely or least able to defend themselves. Conspiracy theories, we're seeing a proliferation of conspiracy theories. And we're seeing that the scapegoats are the minorities, right? And so does that continue, and to what degree? All right. Does chaos reign if there's no one to uphold the law? If we lose our institutions, if we don't have, you know, law enforcement, if we don't have the judiciary system, what happens in that instance? Does it turn to chaos, or do we get mutual aid, right? Do we get anarchism, the good kind? The questions are going to be, or I guess the answers to that question will again be different based on where you are, the cultural aspect of the society where you live. And I imagine that in many areas there will be both of these things happening. But just something to think about from a social aspect, how do people react? How do they treat each other when there's no one watching them closely? Can social cohesion exist during collapse? I've put in quotes here, societal collapse. When we talk about collapse, it's often called societal collapse. So the idea of social cohesion existing throughout that collapse seems oxymoronic because the social aspect, the society itself, is what's collapsing. Is it possible to have social cohesion through collapse? I want to believe yes. And I do believe yes, that in many places there will be a cultural cohesion. There will be ties that keep people together. But it is extremely hard to predict what will happen as this tribalism continues, right? As the scapegoats, as the oppression, as people are hungry and thirsty and unsheltered and all of the terrible, difficult hardships that will come from this, to see, you know, in what ways and where will we see the best in humanity and in what ways and where will we see the worst. All right, from an infrastructure standpoint, we have hard infrastructure, we have soft infrastructure. So hard infrastructure is the physical, the roads, the electrical grid, our equipment, railroad tracks, airports, bridges, canals, utilities, all of the things that physically make our lives function, right? On the soft infrastructure side, we've got people. That's the labor that makes it all happen. Supply chains, all of this is affected by the loss of hard infrastructure. Organizations, things like healthcare, our policing, judiciary systems, education, banking, our technology. So you can probably imagine, you could take any one piece of infrastructure and imagine a severe breakdown of that infrastructure and what impact that would have, right? If I look on the left side here and I look at one, I'll pick random airports. So if suddenly the majority of airports cease to function, right, what effect would that have? It's not small. The economic impact of airports no longer functioning, right, getting people where they need to be. This is regarding labor. This is regarding leisure travel, which will have a massive effect on the economy. And then also cargo. Airports and airplanes are huge for getting cargo where it needs to go, which is a big piece of the supply chain. A breakdown of airports would mean that we rely more heavily on our other pieces of infrastructure, like railroads, like our roads and the ability to haul, you know, through semis and those types of things, which increase the strain on those and cause potential cracks and collapse in those systems as well. So that's just one example of infrastructure issues. Infrastructure is one of the areas that's scariest for me, because I can see it being the biggest cascading issue, right? One piece of infrastructure failing could have a massive effect on the economy, which would then reverberate through and have effects on other areas. These things are also vulnerable to intentional attacks, right? Or to be held hostage by groups in an intense political situation. Our infrastructure is highly vulnerable, and it is not being taken care of. We've done several episodes on infrastructure on the podcast, some of them more general, some of them we actually went in and talked about some of these specifically. We are not, in the U.S. specifically, but I know that throughout the world it's the same, we are not handling our infrastructure well. We are very, very much behind on the maintenance of these pieces of infrastructure, and it's getting worse, and it's going to continue to get worse as our resources are needed in other places. So this is definitely one of the areas to watch. I think as the crumbles continue, our infrastructure will continue to crumble. All right. And then lastly, complexity. So collapse is the simplifying of a complex system. And that's what those two quotes basically told us in the beginning. There are some podcasts. There's one called The Great Simplification. It's by Nate Higgins, and it is exactly on this idea. We're about to have this big cultural shift away from the sort of casual, comfortable, convenient lifestyles that we currently live and going back to a much simpler way of living. That is going to mean a loss of variety, a loss of convenience, a loss of comfort. It may mean for some people who make it through that, right? That they regain access to taking control of their own lives from beginning to end. But again, as I mentioned at the beginning, the amount of variety, the amount of convenience, the amount of comfort that we have is just unbelievable. To be able to have the world at our fingertips, you know, a few blocks away at the grocery store, or to be able to hop in a car and travel across the country or across the world is just a luxury that is not something that will any longer be available during collapse. All right, so maybe as I've gone through some of these options, you've had a fair idea of what the crumbles might look like as things start to fall apart. In my own opinion, this process is going to take time. Some people will preach that collapse is months away or, you know, years away, within a decade before everything falls apart and the world will never be the same. There are even some prolific-ish people who I don't really like to talk about who claim that like climate disasters are going to make humans extinct within 10 years. That's not it. And it's hyperbole to think like that. I do think it's going to feel relatively fast, right? The span of a lifetime is relatively not that long. And as we look back over previous decades, I think we're going to say, wow, a lot has changed this decade, right? Or a lot has changed during my life. But I think we do still have many, many years yet before we get to the point at the end of the slow, 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 before we hit the very fast. But eventually it does come all at once. And while I'm not going to go through a bunch of different slides here on this part, it's essentially as it hits that all at once, you hit the complete loss of each of these areas, right? Where the economy is just completely decoupled from any sort of reality to the point where you don't have a global or a nationwide economy anymore. Your economies basically are anything that you can scrape together and produce locally, right? Politically, again, national politics may get to a point where they no longer exist. President of the United States, what's that? I don't know. Who's in power locally? Who's controlling me in my sphere, right? Who's in charge of my city? And is that someone who has been appointed, or is that someone who has appointed themselves through a show of force and power? I think in a lot of cases, that's going to be what it is. I think in a lot of ways and places, there will be militias and gangs, and that may be how power manifests itself. Geopolitically, same thing. Socially, technologically, our infrastructure. Like, it may just be to a point where all of this just completely falls through and hits rock bottom. There's nowhere else for it to go. And it is literally individual locales, individual people and communities trying to build from the bottom to have any sort of infrastructure to maintain a way of life. Now, when it comes to Jared Diamond's definition, which includes a loss of human life and population, I think it's inevitable, right? And that doesn't necessarily have to mean that a lot of people die from lack of access to food or water, for example. While I do think that will be a part of it, population collapse happens over time as people choose to stop having kids, right? If we're talking about the crumbles, and we'll say that the crumbles takes decades, well, over those decades, people will realize how difficult it is to afford to live. And they'll say, I can't afford children, or I don't want to have children. I don't want to put children through this, that sort of thing. And we're already seeing that. Elon Musk is constantly posting. I just saw a post this morning or yesterday where he is saying that the single biggest threat to humankind is population collapse because people are not having kids anymore. And I mean, yes, that is a threat, but there's a reason behind it. And overshoot is a real thing. And he refuses to believe that. It's a double-edged sword. you grow, you have more kids, you collapse. You stop growing, you collapse, but it's probably going to be a better one. So anyway, all of that said, I do think that there will be a decrease in population over time. I do think that these things, when it happens all at once, will necessitate a simpler way of living, and that simpler way of living will only be able to be sustainable with less people. We simply can't be sustainable at our current headcount, that's a weird way to say it, but our current population level without a simplification or without the complexity that we currently have. So in other words, a simplification necessitates a decrease in population. Whether that happens over a long period of time through population collapse or whether it happens in this all at once moment where things simplify by force and therefore the number of people who can survive in that system simply decreases and there is unfortunately a large amount of death potentially. Okay. I'm going to stop there for this week. Hopefully that gave some ideas around what collapse could be like. I don't like to be super specific or prescriptive because I'd be lying if I tried to tell you exactly what the future was going to be like. Join me on Patreon. I'm going to be putting not only our weekly bonus episodes there where we talk about weekly collapse-related events and things that are going on in the news, but also I'm going to be putting these slides on Patreon. So if you want to have access to the slideshows, you can find those there on the Patreon channel. We have several hundred patrons already. I love having everybody join us there, the conversations that can happen. And again, I'm going to look into setting up a Discord channel. I'm recording these episodes a few weeks in advance just to make sure that I can stay consistent. So hopefully by the time you're listening to this, I will actually have a Discord set up. If I do, I will put a link to it in the description. Thanks so much. Have a great week. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.